I was thinking this morning about how much I appreciate my Wednesday meeting with Joe and Larry. And other people are welcome to come. We haven't seen you. So I mentioned that. And we talk about a variety of stuff. Usually I try to find some article or something we can talk about. But one thing that I wanted to say to you all is that it's a wonderful thing to me when we meet and we... And I get to hear back from them the signs of their spiritual life and growth, where I get to hear them, consider an article and share back the ideas of God's value system and sacrificial love and what that should look like and how that contrasts or compares to what we have read or studied. A few weeks ago after church, there were a few. Larry was there and Sue was there. I don't know who all was involved in the conversation. And he's talking about how focusing on, the one rule of the kingdom, sacrificial love for the benefit of others, how that simplifies so much. And there was something I said at the end of that or during that conversation that you all didn't get to hear. I wanted to pass that along to you. So it was language that I hadn't really used before, and it's kind of stuck with me. It's the thing that I like the most about it is it lets me live my Christianity, not somebody else's. And what do I mean by that? I mean, there's lots of people who tell you what a good Christian looks like, what a good Christian does, what a good Christian is supposed to be. But, so much of whatever list a person will create has a lot more to do with them than Christ. That's okay, because we're all different. I'm not like you. I'm a little bit. I mean, you're you, and you have things that are they're different than me. And so the thing about that is, I'll teach you this one rule of the kingdom, but I expect you to figure out what that looks like in your life. I'm not going to say this is the only way it looks. This is the thing you have to do to prove it's really there. I don't have to do that. You need to find what that looks like in your life and in your family and in how you live. That's your Christianity. And if this thing fits you, do it. If it doesn't, and it's not opposed to the gospel, I don't care if you do it or not. I don't. That's between you and God. That's your Christianity. And so much of what Christianity comes across as to people is here's what it looks like, fit into this one mold. It isn't like that. I like living my Christianity. I don't like living other people's Christianity. I've tried it. It just doesn't fit right. It's like David putting on Saul's armor. Just not going to wear this. The flip side of that concept, I guess there's a couple of aspects to it. One, that there's a caution in it. The caution is we tend to make disciples, pastors, the people that we're teaching, we tend to make disciples that have also our flaws. All right? So the more you hang around with me, you get the good things they teach you, but you also get the flaws that you see in me modeled. It's your responsibility to not do those parts. My problem is a lot of times I can't see them anyway. Okay? I can't see them. I can't change them because I can't see them. Sometimes I'm just bad and I don't want to change. Don't model the bad things. Again, there is that benefit. If I'm not giving you a list of all the things I expect, there's a smaller likelihood that you're going to get an idea that there's this list that I consider you spiritual if you do this. I don't look at you that way. I look, do I see sacrificial love? Do I see the love of God growing in you? That's spiritual life, that's spiritual health, that's spiritual growth. That's it. I'm not looking for anything else. If you want to use anything else as your spiritual disciplines or the things that you think help you grow, great. You find those things, you do those things. So the other caveat is because I don't emphasize those things a lot. I mention them from time to time. Things that might benefit you, I'm not emphasizing. I'm not emphasizing it because I don't see it as a requirement, not because I don't see benefits in them. And I mention them periodically that if you try some of these things, like maybe reading the Bible or praying or something like that, if you try some of these things, you actually might like them. That didn't come out across the way I was intending. You know, it's okay if you get a book and it teaches, you know, something about fasting and you want to fast. Go ahead. Don't come to me and say, Pastor, I read this book and you really need to do it. That's where I draw the line. You can tell me you read a good book on it. I'll say this with a warning. Measure everything you read. Everything you read from a Christian perspective and authorship, critically comparing it to God's value system. Really, really, I'm serious about it. Because there's great books out there that will teach you spiritual disciplines or this or that, and they're full of good stuff. But along with those good stuff is a tendency, sometimes when people talk about spiritual disciplines, is to try to get you to live their Christianity. It's great Christianity for them. It might not be it for you. And if you try to do it for you, you might feel guilty. You might feel a failure or whatever else. That should not be the case. One of the reasons why I don't emphasize those things. As soon as you get a list, you're either going to go, woohoo, I'm spiritual because I did it, or what's wrong with me? I'm such a failure. It's one rule of the kingdom. Love sacrificially. It'll look different in your life than in mine.
This is actually something I've been thinking of because I don't feel like I've gotten my balance yet. There needs to be some balance of spiritual disciplines in Christianity. But we don't have to emphasize particular details of procedures, shall we say. We don't have to, like I read so much every day or I pray so many minutes every day, or whatever you might want to do. And yet, there needs to be personal discipline in the Christian life. Otherwise, how can you live sacrificially? And so how do we make a balance there? Because somehow the disciplines need to be emphasized so that we don't forget them, not because they're rules, but because it's the effort that's needed to live Christ-like.
Yes and no. I mean, I'm not going to say that they're required to live the value system. I will not do that. They're valuable in keeping Christ-likeness before you. For example, the prayer, God, make me a sacrificial lover. I'm not even going to ask how many people have prayed that prayer. Okay, that if you understand what I've taught you, that's no small thing. And if I said who prayed it and some people didn't put their hand up, I would understand completely. I would, because I really get what that prayer's about, and it means you give up everything. And if you're not at that point, you're somewhere along getting to that point. You are sacrificial, you are growing, but to say, make me like Christ on the cross is a big deal. And if you can pray that prayer, great. That's the prayer I'd love to see you pray. Praying that prayer puts you in a position for God to work through you in a better and new and greater way than he does. Because you are inviting him to, well, hammer off everything that doesn't look like Jesus. And that won't be a pleasant process. It will be a painful and difficult process. It won't be a quick process. Because after the first hammer blow, you will take it back. And it'll be a long time until you pray that again. They are valuable. They are valuable that you're praying. They are valuable that you're reading the Bible. Because, I mean, you get a little bit of instruction from me here on a Sunday morning. But it's probably not enough. I don't know what you do with your time. If all you do is on Sunday morning and you're thinking about that through the week, it could be just fine for you. If you need more and you want to read more and you want to read Christian books, you want to read the Bible, all these things are useful and good. If, one of the things that I've been doing recently, I've been listening to my sermons. You know, all the ones that I did 18 months ago, the launch sermons, and then, you know, so that foundational stuff, and then what are the five elements of the gospel, and then now I'm in the middle of the book of Matthew. And this, please, this is your biggest chance to get me wrong will be right now, but try not to get me wrong. I am so humbled when I listen to the guy in on the tape. He knows so much. And he is so spiritual. And I'm so convicted. I really mean that. I listen to it and it's like, wow. I cannot even begin to imagine how quickly I forget stuff. And I also realized, like, there's a lot of stuff to forget there. And I said to, I think it was to Melissa, I need to probably just teach the book of Matthew every year or every second year. And I really am considering doing that. Because if I have taught it as many times as I have, and I listen to it, and it has such a powerful impact on me, and I don't even remember what all's in it, it's, to me, one of the most significant books that we have. It is the clearest, in my opinion, the clearest recording of the message of Christ that we have anywhere. I love that book. The disciplines. You know, there's different things you can do. I've told you before, I don't fast. I don't. I might go without something, but I don't fast from food. When I fast from food, I get a headache immediately, and it persists. And I'm not going to just live on ibuprofen. So, you know, you have to see what suits you. Some people can fast, and some people, you know, they endure the discomfort, and they get over it, and they have a wonderful time fasting, and blah, blah, blah. Great. If you've never tried fasting of any way, kind, go try it. I mean, maybe you just want to fast a meal. But what are you doing that? I mean, you just don't just skip a meal. Oh, I fasted today. No, I mean, you take the time of eating and you think about and consider that your nourishment from life is from God. Man shall not live by bread alone, but by what I get from my Father in heaven. That's the purpose of fasting for the Christian. Fasting in the Old Testament was really a sign of a humbleness before God for sin. I don't see that as a New Testament concept, fasting in that way. Some people do, and some people really do promote what's called a solemn assembly. In the Old Testament, the elders of Israel would come together and they'd, you know, weep and grieve over their sin, and, you know, hopefully God would answer. To me, I look at that and it's like, that's just not our experience. My Christian life for me isn't sitting around moping about how sinful I am or the church is or whatever. It's about recognizing that he's forgiven me and, you know, going out there and loving, forgiving other people, taking to other people the message of reconciliation. It's not dwelling these things. Some people do that, and that's fine. And if that works for them, great. Furthermore, a lot of times, one of the things that goes along with that, you'll see these people quote 2 Chronicles, "If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray, I'll hear from heaven and heal their land." And, you know, that's a great verse. But that's not for Americans. Just so you know, that is Old Testament. That was a promise for Israel when they lived in the land. And you can do it all you want, and God may bless you in that, and God may answer from heaven, but it's not because that's a promise given to Americans to have God come and heal your land. Again, it's sorting out the ideas and keeping them in a proper place. So sometimes the focus on those kind of issues, that if God will only bring revival if America repents. Well, yes, if America repents and turns to Christ, that is the essence of what revival is. I'm not trying to diss those things. For some people, those are very important, and they seek those, and I'm fine. To me, that's not the gospel, and they're welcome to do it or not do it. So there's the danger in everything I say. Again, remember what I said earlier? Whatever I disciple to you, I don't want you to adopt a negative attitude towards something just because it sounds that I have that. I have more. It's not something I see as a correct interpretation or something that we need to emphasize at the church. And yet, if people want to do that, that's fine. You understand the balance I'm trying to present to you there? Other spiritual disciplines, memorizing the Bible. Some people call it spiritual discipline. It's just useful to you. It's useful to you to have the truth of God dwelling within you. David said, I have hidden your word in my heart that I would not sin against you. It's just a good place to have it. Now, occasionally, you know, you think about these people that get locked in prison and have no access to the Bible. The only Bible they have with them is the stuff they took with them. But it's amazing if you're reading your Bible regularly. And again, let me come back to that one. And memorizing it. It's amazing how familiar you will become with things. You might not have to. Don't worry about memorizing chapter and verse. I don't. You'll see a lot of times when I'll quote something, I'll say just the book name. So I don't spend a lot of time working about those. And sometimes I've memorized sections. So to me, there's no distinguishing from one verse to another. For reading the Bible, I would emphasize to you, read the New Testament. Read from, don't spend a lot of time in eschatology because, you know, it's time that can encourage you, but it's time that I think time is better spent, say, in the book of Matthew or the book of John. I think you'd get far more out of that. Books that I think are the best ones for people to read, Matthew and John and Romans and Galatians, the Corinthians, Philippians, these books are rich in power. Ephesians and Colossians, rich books, so much in them. The pastoral epistles, very, very good books. There's lots in there for you. Old Testament, should you read it? Yeah, but I wouldn't spend most of my time there. I mean, if you look at your Bible and you find out how much is Old Testament versus how much New Testament, I mean, come on. If you're spending a lot of time in the Old Testament, based on the, you know, the size, if you're saying, well, it's, you know, five times bigger, I'll spend five, please, no. This one's more than five times as important. There's some important parts in the Old Testament. But then there's these big things, like when I'm teaching in Sunday school. It's narrative, it's history, it's story. Is there useful stuff in there? Can you learn lessons? Yeah. But don't hang there forever. The Psalms, they're good. The bits and pieces you'll understand. Proverbs, I'm all for it. The Prophets, there's some good stuff in sections. You know, kind of read through it, and if you see some good stuff, mark it, note it. There's a lot of stuff that just doesn't apply to you. You know, here's an oracle against Babylon. Here's an oracle against Edom. Read it. You can get some good out of it. You can learn some things from it. But if you're spending a lot of time reading those kind of things, that isn't the same level of truth, if you'll want to put it in that category, as reading what Jesus teaches in the book of Matthew. That is the stuff that will do so much more for you. If you're not reading in the Bible at all or studying it, you should be. It's not the basis of your relationship with God, but it enhances that relationship. It causes that relationship to have more meaning and to grow. Do I spend a lot of time reading the Bible myself personally? I spend hours and hours and hours and hours reading it and studying it for you, getting ready for Sunday morning. So yes, on the one hand I do, but on the other hand, do I sit down and read 10 chapters a day because that's the spiritual thing to do? No, I don't. In fact, I get far more out of listening to my old sermons than I would out of even if I read Matthew on my own. And the reason is, there's some smart guy telling me what it means. Because I read it and go, wow, that's deep. You know, I was Sermon on the Mount this week. And it's talking about casting your pearls before a swine. And I know I'm going to be mentioning that in the sermon because I've just read it. And I'm thinking, okay, what does it mean? I couldn't remember what it meant. So I'm waiting for the guy on the tape to tell me what it means. And they said it. Of course, that's great. Now, I hope it sticks with me this time. You know, that's how I feel about that. You know, even you can read it yourself, but you know, it's the meditating on it. When I wrote those sermons, I spent hours and hours and hours thinking about what it meant. And I could do that again, certainly. Or I can cheat and just listen to the tape. And so there is a use. I get some of the things that I teach you out of the fact that I just spent a lot of time thinking about it. So here I am, I'm reading this history of Saul and David, and I stop and think, you know, okay, here's this thing. You're like this morning saying, we got these two stories. Well, where the pieces fit together? If I'm considering this, I want to know, I want to think about it. I want to figure out some background. Now, not all of Bible study is the same thing. If you're spending a lot of time doing background Bible study and stuff, that's okay. But again, leave that for that. You know, let me dump that on Sunday school. If you have a limited amount of time, I'd rather you went and read stuff in the New Testament, and let me give you the short version on Sunday morning. If you've never read the Old Testament, then make some reading plan for the Old Testament. But again, the New Testament's so much more powerful. There are portions of the Old Testament that the New Testament refers to again and again, like the life of Abraham, certain portions of that that are very important and significant. And I would really encourage you to make sure you know those stories and know where to find those. The giving of the Davidic covenant, an important historical event. But you get into the prophets, there's good stuff in there, but it's kind of woven in between a lot of stuff that was for other nations and judgment. So you don't always, including Judah and Israel. So the parts that you will see as maybe the richest and most applicable to you, and there's portions in there that are that good, they're few and far between relative to what you get in the New Testament. Okay? In the New Testament, you get Jesus coming and saying, it's my kingdom, there's one rule in it, sacrificial love for the benefit of others. I did it for you, you do it. That kind of sums it up. In the Old Testament, you have these really cool bits and pieces spread throughout the prophets, but they're harder to get to if you don't know where you're looking. And if you are on I'm limited in the amount of time I spend reading the Bible anyway plan of Bible reading, read the New Testament. Just read the New Testament. Let me handle the Old Testament for you. You'll also know I have never taught through the book of Isaiah in church. I just haven't. There's a reason for it. There's great portions of the book of Isaiah that I've mentioned. And then there's significant portions of it that would be so dry and boring for me to teach you. I would have to go in such huge chunks to point out those things. Yeah, Sunday school kind of thing, but it's limited in its usefulness given the amount of time that I have. So yes, the spiritual disciplines are important, and you should have something. But even people, well, they make their list of spiritual disciplines. I like to keep the list kind of short. Bible reading, prayer, fasting. There's people, I've seen books on spiritual disciplines. They got like a dozen different things in there. I'm like, wow. You know, I didn't even know I was so unspiritual. I couldn't even make a list of the spiritual disciplines. But some people, they'll put a lot of things. Sharing your faith becomes a spiritual discipline. And the reason sometimes spiritual disciplines or having a list like that is important, if you don't think about doing some things, you might not do those things. That's, the word that's used so much now, I hate to use it, intentional. Oh, I hate that word. It's just so overused right now. If you don't make a plan to do something, you will be more likely to fail at it. So the purpose of having a list of things that you'd like to accomplish as a spiritual discipline, not just for your own growth, but put things in the list that have to do with outreach or evangelism, times in which you're looking for an opportunity to share your faith. That would go back into the idea of prayer. So it's not just about, Lord, change me, but also help me identify, help me be aware, help me look for the opportunities to share what you have done in my life with other people. That prayer, again, God works through in changing you to make you pay attention to life and develops within you a willingness to share. Because then you see it and the Holy Spirit goes, hey, that's the moment you've been waiting for. Otherwise, you're kind of going along. It's like, later on, I could have used that time. But if you're praying about it ahead of time, the Holy Spirit will get you right there on the spot. And you'll feel like, oh, I should say something now. That's because you have opened yourself up and said, I'm willing to be used. God doesn't force stuff on us. He works when we're willing. He works when we invite him to work through us.